Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Glad to be with you. And I have to confess, I'm very excited. Returning guest, Wade Fowle. He is a PhD and chartered financial analyst. He is the professor of retirement income in the new PhD program for financial and retirement planning at the American College in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, and founder of Retirement Researcher, director of Retirement Research, McLean Asset Management, and Stream Solutions. And Wade has been all over my social media sites and all of the different feeds and blogs and posts and articles and columns that I follow in the retirement planning area, and really leading the way, really out there is what you would call a thought leader and a person who is really helping the retirement income planning industry or the folks that specialize this rethink and reevaluate and look at different ways to make the most of people's retirement assets and to be able to retire and stay retired. So I'm very pleased to have him with us. He has his doctorate in economics from Princeton University. And as I said, he's done a lot of research in the retirement planning area. He is very active in all of the blogging and has been an expert panelist, Wall Street Journal, and his research has been discussed in a variety of outlets. So I'm very excited. The website, before we get into the conversation, because once Wade and I start talking, there may not be time for this. RetirementResearcher.com is Wade's brand new website, RetirementResearcher.com. So as we're talking about the subjects today, you can go back and take a look at Wade's work. Wade, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And it's my pleasure. And I had to front load the introductions and get some of that out of the way, because I know that you and I could spend about 2 weeks just talking about retirement income planning. And I really applaud the work you're doing. And, you know, one of the things that people really struggle with, because they hear so many different conflicting reports or different strategies that different financial people will recommend, is how they should structure an intelligent and sustainable withdrawal strategy when they are in retirement. So what do you say to that? I mean, it's such a big cluster of different ideas that people have. How should somebody approach that concept to develop something that makes sense working with an advisor?
Right. So I think the starting point for that discussion is always what's known as the 4% rule. And that's about having a spending strategy where every year you always adjust your spending on cue for the inflation rate and ignore any sort of market fluctuations. And that sort of strategy, I think, was really just it's a research simplification to get some idea about a starting point. But in reality, most people are going to make adjustments to their spending. They're not necessarily going to need to always just adjust spending with inflation. And otherwise, if the market is not doing well, they may cut their spending. If the markets are doing great, they might want to increase their spending. And there's just a whole host of strategies that are discussed in the research and online and discussion boards all over the place about how to adjust spending with the idea you want to keep spending smooth, but at the same time, you want to make some adjustments when it seems necessary. So where do you draw the line? When do you make those adjustments?
That is the question. And some people take the approach, which I think makes a lot of sense, Wade, is to, you know, establish certain reliable, consistent incomes for the fixed expenses or maybe the bulk of the expense that maybe some of it might be categorized as discretionary, but you know you're going to spend it anyway. And then, again, establish that from a reliable source that's not going to be diminished by a hiccup or even a bigger correction in the market. And then have the things that are the more icing on the cake, the extras that you can curtail pretty easily. You know, maybe that annual cruise that you don't have to take if the market's not doing well and you just can't afford to take the extra money out.
Right, absolutely. And I think I've done a lot of research in this area, and I think the natural interpretation of my research findings is along those lines, that you really want to have a more secure type of income floor to cover essentials, and then can start really getting involved with the stock market and other things for the part of the portfolio that's meant to cover those discretionary, more discretionary in nature type of expenses.
Well, and I'll take it a little further, maybe a little bit of, you know, cold dose of reality here, Wade, that I've seen firsthand people that have come to me and that have taken an approach where they really are very, very dependent on the markets for their income that they take every month. And I look at them and go, golly, that's no way to live. I mean, the stress level is high. They have to check the market every day. I had a lady come in not long ago, Wade. I know you'll appreciate this. She's tracking the market on a daily basis, putting it into a spreadsheet. She's looking at what she's going to draw. She's hoping that when she makes her, she looks at when she's going to pull the money out and hoping she pulls it on a good day for the market, quote unquote. And so it just creates a lot of stress. And you can imagine what she's going to be doing and freaking out, if you will, when the market takes a hard hit. And it's going to at some point. It's just a matter of time.
Right. And I think there really are two different philosophies about approaching building the retirement income strategy. And different people, their psychological makeup really, for some people, what she's doing might be reasonable, but if that really causes a person to have trouble sleeping at night and to really be stressed about all these market fluctuations, then that's not necessarily the best approach to take, to really be relying on a very aggressive type of investment portfolio.
Well, and as
hoping for the best.
Yeah, of course, you have to hope for the best. And again, you have to hope for a nice sequence of returns, which I know you've written about as well, Wade, that you know, you've got to hope that all those negative returns come at the end, not at the front.
Right.
Right? They better not come up front or we're in big trouble. You know, you have a couple of big losses in the market right after you retire and you're like, wait a minute, I thought I could take this 4% out every year. And, you know, your account has shrunken by 30 or 40% on the front end. It's awfully difficult to make that up.
Right. If somebody is saving for 30 years and then, say, planning for a 30-year retirement, they might be thinking, well, I've got this 60-year time horizon, and that's a pretty long-term time horizon. So I can just consider, what do the markets do on average over such long 60-year periods? But the reality is that there's a sequence of returns risk, and it's the 10 or 15 years, right around the retirement date that really matter so disproportionately in what's going to be the lifetime outcomes for that individual.
Mm, yeah.
And over those shorter periods, you really are a lot more vulnerable to market volatility, because even though stocks over a long period of time may come out to give some sort of average return that you would expect, 10 or 15 years is still too short to, there's a lot of variations of what was the stock return over different 10 or 15 year periods in history. So it's riskier than people might think when they're thinking in terms of, say, investing from the age of 30 through the age of 90.
Well put, Wade. Well, at the time we're doing this program, you know, we may look back on this at some point in the future and say that was very, very much a prognostication or not. But if we look at where the markets have been of late and we're going into a seventh year of a bull market, we absolutely positively could have a bear market start and continue for 2 or 3 years, or have a languishing of returns over a period of time that don't support the portfolio. Not just have a loss in the portfolio, but just not support and create some real challenges. And you know, for some people, yeah, maybe there are some folks out there, Wade, that they could stomach and have the mental or intestinal fortitude to hold up and stand up in a really significant market sell off. And continue with the strategy they've got in place of pulling the money out every month. But a lot of people can't stick with it and will not stick with it. If they have a lot exposed, they'll say, I don't have a choice. I got to cut my losses. I got to stop now. And they, of course, sell at the worst possible time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it is something that people need to be very aware of. If you're just joining us, Dr. Wade Fowle is our guest. PhD, CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst, Professor of Retirement Income in the new PHP program over at the American College. And he's also got a website you have to take a look at, retirementresearcher.com. We'll be right back with a quick break.
Are you looking for a trustworthy local advisor for your investment and retirement planning, but you're not sure how or where to begin? Start by looking for a certified financial planner practitioner. Visit www.cfp.net to search for an advisor in your local area who's earned this highly regarded professional certification. Pick three CFP practitioners Set an appointment and interview them. Ask questions. Listen carefully to their answers. Check references and research their firms with the Better Business Bureau. This PSA is brought to you by Holland Financial, who wants to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And welcome back. Dr. Wade Fowle is our guest today. His research has been discussed in the media and print editions of various magazines, The Economist, Wall Street Journal, Money Magazine, New York Times, and Smart Money. So we're very glad to have him on our program. And his website, retirementresearcher.com, a lot of good information there. Wade, back to the that rule of thumb, which is really the way I look at all these things, you know, the rule of 100, the 4% withdrawal rate, all these things are rules of thumb. They're a great place to start, not necessarily the best place to finish how you're going to do this. If if you look at this 4% withdrawal rate, it's been very much turned into kind of a number that a lot of people look at. If that number isn't necessarily a good number or, you know, isn't a real rule, does it make sense maybe to start a little lower with the percentage you're going to take out and then you can always increase it? Is it good to build in some flexibility?
Well, it's always great to have flexibility just as a general philosophy. But yeah, if someone does have the flexibility, it's a matter of the more you spend today, the more prepared you have to be to spend less in the future. And so if you are prepared, if you have that flexibility that you can think about spending more today, which may be above what is a safe number. And then if markets do fine, you can sustain that throughout your retirement. But if we do get a market downturn early in someone's retirement, that might require making some cuts to that initial spending amount. And if to the extent that someone's willing and able to do that, then yeah, I think that sort of strategy can work. And what you were saying more specifically, the safety first philosophy about retirement income is more along those lines, that you don't try to spend more than what's the bond yield curve, like what the interest rates that are available today can support. And it's only when you start to get some decent market returns that your portfolio is growing, then you can justify increasing your spending rate. The opposite of that is trying to spend future market returns in advance, assuming you're going to get a high market return. And so you try to sustain a higher spending rate, higher than what interest rates today would really justify.
That's almost like a payday loan on the stock market.
Right. I call it amortizing the upside.
Oh, nice.
I don't know a better term, because it's not really the correct use of the word amortize, but
right.
It's like spending future market gains before you've actually received them.
See, that's the difference between you and me, Wade. The PhD says amortizing the upside, and the financial planner out on the street says it's a payday loan on the Wall Street market gain. So that's cool. We're both talking the same language. Well, the thing that is next natural, I think, to talk about, Wade, because I think this is what people are going to be very curious about, and I appreciate your vantage point, because all the things you're reading and seeing and doing and researching, and the thing that I am seeing, and I want your take on this, is it's so, when you're dealing with this challenge of having a reliability of income and also getting return on your investment, two different ROIs, the challenge is, or a strategy to deal with that, is to create multiple sources of income that help with flexibility of how you're going to get what you need, where you're going to get it from, because there will be times when different parts of your strategy do better than others. So, for example, and I know you've written and researched a lot in these areas, having bonds, be that individual bonds or bond funds, have annuities, have maybe a standby line of credit, home equity line of credit, reverse mortgage line of credit. Having all that in addition to a cash emergency fund, heaven forbid we have cash on hand, and that diversified stock portfolio, all of that together can give us some real flexibility.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. And that's all about this sequence of returns risk, which is a really important concept that I don't think has been completely internalized by everyone in the financial services industry. But sequence of returns risk matters. And if you're trying to fund a constant amount from an investment portfolio that's fluctuated in value, that's what's really causing sequence of returns risk. So you mentioned just, well, having some like a cash reserve or a standby line of credit on a reverse mortgage, those are then other sources of spending potential that can help to avoid if the stock market declines, rather than selling stocks at a loss, you can tap into the line of credit on a reverse mortgage, or you can tap into the cash, some sort of cash buffer that you've prepared. And that can really help to alleviate sequence of returns risk, because it avoids the cause, which is having to sell assets at a loss and digging a hole for the portfolio to maintain the same spending level.
Yeah, amen to that, Wade. Well, you know, the thing that, again, there's always, and I know you know this, there's always an attempt on the part of the, I want to say maybe more of the investor to try to simplify things, or the maybe the sales or advisory interface with the client, trying to make things easier and simpler, and where's my easy button that I can push? And what I've seen over time, and I'm sure you've observed this, is an attempt to try to establish some sort of, again, the safe withdrawal rate, but also, you know, wasn't that long ago when there were these pie in the sky average expected returns of, you know, 10, 12% or more, and people would build their retirement plans based on these, what I think have always been, in my view, lofty expectations about the market. But the more dangerous part of doing that, Wade, is that, you know, back to your sequence of return, is assuming a sequence that never happens. And that sequence that everybody, you know, at least for a period of time was being used, was, be it 7 or 10 or 12% returns, it was a sequence that was the same every year. There was no sequence. It was just, hey, the market averages, long-term historical average for the market is 10 or 12%. Let's just use that. We'll draw against it. Hey, 4% doesn't seem like much against 12. That's got to be safe, right?
Right. And that's really, yeah, that was the great service that William Bengen provided when he developed the 4% rule in the 1990s, that he made a lot of simplifying assumptions, but he brought those expectations down from what you were saying exactly, which is, if we assume, well let's say 8% returns on average from the stock market after inflation, that implies the safe withdrawal rate is 8%. And that's because there's no sequence there. It's just simply a return. Every year you get an 8% return. You can withdraw 8% and get back to where you started. And that's not how things work when you have markets going up and down. And that's where William Bengen, in developing the 4% rule, at least, well,
he brought it into focus,
to at least fix that earlier problem.
Yeah, he did bring it into focus. I think I know there's been some unraveling of the advisability or supportability of a 4% withdrawal rate, and I agree with you, Wade. I don't think that was really his original intent. He did us a great service in that original research that said, look, you can't have a sequence of uniform returns. It just doesn't work that way. And I did some of my own, be it very rudimentary, very, very crudely calculated, very basic analysis myself in writing some of the things I've written over the years, Wade, and it just is not supported. You know, you have to have this beautiful, linear, repetitive return that just is every year the same to be able to support the returns. It just doesn't work, because if you throw in, you don't even have to throw in a bear market. That's what's really funny about these sequence of returns, or what I call the dollar cost ravaging risk, that you don't even have to have a big bear market. You just have to have something other than these, you know, consistent returns to have the portfolio be wiped out, even if long term you end up with a, you know, say an average return of 12% over a 15-year period. If you have a year where it's negative 10 or 12, that's all you need to really blow a hole in the portfolio and not be able to recover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can look at it like, just assume every year you're going to get an 8% return, except for one year where you get a minus 10% return, and then track which year does that happen. And right, if that minus 10% return happens in the first year of retirement, well, that's the most devastating time for it to happen. And
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what that specific number example I gave, whether you...
It's good. No, it's good.
Portfolio, but yeah, you definitely, it causes a problem.
Well, and see, and that's where these multiple sources, it's kind of, I always use the analogy of having different levers to pull with my clients. That, look, we have six levers we can pull. We're going to pull this lever and take our income from this source this year. But you know what? The market drops 20% next year. Well, then maybe we pull it from our cash reserve, or maybe you've got that standby line of credit. We'll pull it from there and not have to pull the money out of the market when it's, you don't want to sell on sale, you want to buy on sale. So we don't have to, you know, liquidate 120% to get the same amount of money. So these are the strategies that people need to be thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good stuff. Wade Fowle, ladies and gentlemen, PhD, Chartered Financial Analyst, and the website, retirementresearcher.com. A lot of great work there by Wade. We'll grab another quick break. We'll be right back.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, 3 chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialists, and certified annuity specialists. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and individualized attention to each and every one of our clients. Count on Holland Financial for your financial advice, not only for today, but for many years to come. Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Wade Fowles, our guest today. He has been the past selectee for Investment News Power 20 for people expected to shape the financial advisory industry and is recipient of the Financial Planning Magazine's Influencer Award, and you now understand why. Welcome back, Wade.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Research, retirementresearcher.com is a website. And so these strategies that people can take, you know, again, it takes a variety of things for people to build their plans and to be able to adapt to, you know, it's called adapting to the intelligence on the ground, like we hear in warfare, adapting to what's going on. It's easy to look at these long-term averages, but you've got to be able to really adapt. Now, I know that you have another strategy, which I think is actually very innovative and a bit provocative, to be honest with you. And I think it's interesting that people actually might look at not necessarily decreasing their stock exposure or equity exposure over time in retirement, but actually might increase it. And that could be a strategy that could help to support long-term withdrawals. Give us a little bit of an overview of how that works and what you found with your research.
Sure. Yeah. So this is a risk management technique that's really meant to help alleviate sequence of returns risk as well. And you can think of a U-shaped lifetime asset, a stock allocation glide path, where this is research I did with Michael Kitsis, and mm-hmm. we basically agree with how target date funds exist pre-retirement, and that's often a default in a 401k plan or other places where when someone's young, they have a higher stock allocation. The stock allocation decreases and gets to a low point around the retirement date. But there hasn't been a lot of investigation about what should those glide paths do, what should the target date fund do after retirement. And most of the existing target date funds either transition into a retirement income fund that keeps a fairly level asset allocation, or they continue to decrease the stock allocation. And what we were looking at was, well, from this lifetime perspective, once you get away from the retirement date and you've got a particular lifestyle spending goal in mind, you're either going to be heading down the track of your retirement's going to be successful because you don't have poor market returns early in retirement, or you're in a more of a track where you did get poor market returns early in retirement and you're on a downward trajectory with the portfolio. But in either case, as long as if you get that bear market early in retirement, as long as you don't have a 30-year period with continuing negative returns, you should be better off as a general principle by having the stock allocation gradually increase. And what we were really responding to is with this whole 4% rule world and research, the recommendation is that retirees hold 50 to 75% stock throughout their retirement. And we're saying, well, you can really start off at a lower level and just gradually work your way up to somewhere in that range rather than maintaining that range for the whole retirement and get about the same or possibly slightly better outcomes with a lower average stock allocation over your lifetime.
Well, I really like that. And I, you know, part of why I like it, Wade, is you're validating to some of my approach. But the other reason I like it just from a more of a conceptual standpoint is what you're really doing with that is you are starting out with a heavier cash or more stable position, less in the market. So you've reduced the potential impact of that first year ugly showing up bear market at the beginning of your retirement. And in effect, that is allowing you to invest increasingly more into the market, which is in effect a dollar cost averaging in as opposed to exposing yourself to this sequence of return or dollar cost averaging, as I put it, risk to your retirement income. So what you're doing, one way to do that from a practical standpoint, which I love the concept, is you've allocated your assets, you've got some money in more liquid or maybe things that are producing a reliable income, and then you can afford to, again, dollar cost average in and benefit from buying when it's low and not buying as much when it's high.
Right.
So that's what's interesting is what you're doing with that approach, Wade. And I know I'm telling you what you already know, but I just find it very remarkable. And it's very innovative twisting of kind of the strategy and the U-shape application, as you put it, that, you know, you're really using dollar cost averaging in a very effective way, because long term, historically speaking, stocks win, but you can't have that critical phase up into and right after retirement be exposed to an all-in market approach, because we could have another 2008, and that's going to wreck the best of made plans.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, I just usually kind of say it. You want to have the lowest stock allocation when you're the most vulnerable to absolute losses in wealth,
yeah,
which is when the portfolio is the biggest. And
yeah,
usually that's around the retirement date.
I tell you what, Wade, you and I make a very dangerous team. Well, I'm going to have to come up and see you and get my PhD.
We'd be happy to have you.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's impressive work, and I really applaud the research. And, you know, I think that the takeaway for our listeners, Wade, is that, you know, it's the analysis, the evaluation, the planning, the building of their retirement and how they're going to enjoy their money or how they're going to get their income. It's not a one-time event. It's an ongoing process. And, you know, it's like that beautiful plant, flowers you plant in the ground. You can't just say, all right, beautiful, put it in the ground, I'm done. It requires ongoing nurturing and attention.
Right.
There you go. All right. Well, we're full of analogies here, Wade. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, we're glad to have Wade with us. Wade Fowle, PhD, Chartered Financial Analyst, Professional Retirement Income over at the American College for the new Financial Planning PhD program, which I think is really interesting. RetirementResearcher.com is Wade's website. You can go take a look at that. Wade, you know we'll call and have you back again. Thank you so much.
Okay, great. Yeah, thank you.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.